Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's 5 o'clock on the most listened to sports talk show for your ride home.
What?
It is time for the Falcons Report.
Whoa! KC got another pick. Here's Julio down the far sideline and will score. Sacked. Grady Jarrett got another one.
You shall not pass.
The 5 o'clock Falcons Report.
Oh my heavens!
On Dukes and Bell.
It is Dukes and Bell, 5 o'clock on a Monday, Memorial Day. Willie P. and Nick Kale in for the guys who are back tomorrow. This is the time of the program where they would tell you to get a nice cold Heyman Ale from Oconee Brewing. Find them online at OconeeBrewing.com. Find out where you can get your Heyman closest to you. If you can listen to us, you can get the Heyman Blonde Ale. And that is all very, very, very good decision. Time for the 5 o'clock Falcons Report, which is brought to you by Domino's. The Domino's Tracker now lets you customize GPS-enabled delivery alerts so you know exactly when to expect them. Try it when you order two or more two-topping medium Domino's pizzas for $5.99 each. Pan pizza will be extra. Ask for this offer. Availability and charges may apply. Devontae Freeman says that he is either going to sit out or retire the 2020 season if he does not get the deal that he wants. He still wants big money, according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. Could he actually retire? Maybe. That's according to Rap Sheet. How funny do you find this whole bit here, Nick?
Well, I mean, this is... I like Devontae Freeman, but this is laughable because let's look at some of his peers. Carlos Hyde, he's been in the league 5 or 6 years. Last year for the Texans, had his career best season, 1,070 yards. Just shy of 1,100 yards. And what did he get this offseason? He got a one-year deal with the Seattle Seahawks. Mm-hmm. So if Carlos Hyde is balling out and getting the minimum, what does Devontae Freeman think he's going to get removed from his better days?
I mean, it's odd. You know, when even a guy like Todd Gurley, who's a former All-Pro guy, he only gets... what, $5, $6 million from the Falcons? Mm-hmm. Like, what does Devontae feel like he's worth? Like, honestly. And here's the problem is that, you know, he got himself obviously he took a big gamble when he made that 5-year, $41 million extension, and the Falcons did as well. It's funny how we go back in time and everyone has this revisionist history type deal where they say, oh, you know, I would have rather had Tevin Coleman than not Devontae Freeman. You know, it was always interesting to me to find people who said certain things about that time period and go back and say, oh, I was right. I was here. I was on this. The truth be told, it was kind of a Sophie's choice. You could not afford to pay both, and there's no real indicator that you wouldn't have been wrong either way. This is what happens with the running back position. Anytime you want to give big money to a running back, their shelf life is never going to equal what that big money contract is because that position just falls so much off a cliff when you get to a certain point.
No, I'm with you, and you look at the Tennessee Titans. I mean, Derrick Henry had a monster year last year, still in his prime, has shown really no signs of decline, and he gets franchise tagged. And I think when you look at Devontae Freeman, if he were to sit out a year, I think there's a small percentage chance that it would be beneficial for him health-wise. Maybe the legs get a little fresher. You start to feel better with your body. But there's a larger percentage in me that says Devontae Freeman ran very physically for a smaller guy.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, the shelf life you mentioned, you know, 2.5 to 3.5 years, Devontae Freeman might have reached his expiration date.
Never really could stay on the field, too, had issues with concussions and also other things. He apparently got a one-year, $4 million offer from Seattle. Why are you balking at that, man? Especially when you have a quarterback in Russell Wilson who's probably not going to depend on you that much.
Yeah, and also, you figure the amount of guys that Pete Carroll has really rotated in, that running back position in Seattle post Marshawn Lynch has been a revolving door, so he would have got couple million bucks, he probably would have had, I don't know, six to eight carries a game. He probably would have had a decent career there.
Not to mention, it got so bad at one point last year, they had to call Lynch out of retirement because they went through so many guys.
Yeah,
so agreed. That's a thing where it's like, okay, you're going to get opportunities there. Apparently, he only had a $1 million deal between with Philadelphia to try and get veteran help behind Miles Sanders. I think he's overestimated his market. Deion Buchanan was signed by the Falcons late last week. That's a depth linebacker signing, and what also some might be thinking about when it comes to the fact that it might be an indicator about where exactly the Falcons feel like they're going to go about with their alignment on defense next year. It's looking a lot more, Nick, like they're going to go with a kind of 4-2-5 base defense where you have maybe DeMonte KZ and Keanu Neal on the field at the same time. You think about even a guy like Jalen Hawkins or even maybe somebody like Buchanan playing a hybrid linebacker slash nickel corner spot with maybe Foye Oluokun rotating with Michael Walker alongside Debo to try and have a lot more of that spacing to defend the spread offense and to defend two pretty sizably talented quarterbacks in Drew Brees and Tom Brady who are part of this division now.
Yeah, you would think that he'd fit in really good in a nickel package as a linebacker with Deion Jones. And I'm just looking at his career. You know, you go back to the 2014 draft, he was a late first-round pick. His first 2 years in Arizona, he played all 16 games both years. He had 112 total tackles his second year, two sacks his first year, three sacks his second year, couple of interceptions. But really, since 2015, he has been unable to stay healthy, playing no more than 13 games. So I think, really, it's in this division, it's not an overly physical division. You mentioned with the spread offenses and the passing and the skill players, it actually might fit Deion Buchanan's skill set because he's a 6'1", 210-pound hybrid safety linebacker. It could be exactly what Dan Quinn's looking for.
There are plenty of former first-round picks that were already on this roster, but the Falcons have currently added six in free agency or trades. You have Hayden Hurst, mm-hmm. Dante Fowler, Todd Gurley, Laquon Treadwell, Charles Harris, and then we mentioned Buchanan. You believe that the best of the bunch, or at least the one that will have the biggest impact, is Hayden Hurst.
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard for all the guys you mentioned to eclipse what Hurst is going to do this year. And this is just a projection based on what he has this year. I mean, I think we all would agree Matt Ryan is the more accomplished quarterback than Lamar Jackson. Lamar was the MVP last year, but Matt's body of work, I think, speaks for itself. And you factor in Julio, you factor Ridley. I don't see any reason why Hayden Hurst can't have an Austin Hooper-light type of year. And if you go back to last year, Will, I mean, Hurst had 30 catches, and he was the third tight end behind Andrews and Boyle on a team that loved to run the ball. So, I mean, this is a guy that's got the ability to be, I don't want to say an all-pro, but maybe a Pro Bowler?
I think so, too. I mean, I really love Hayden Hurst. I loved his game at South Carolina. I was surprised when I looked back at his career numbers after he went into the draft and saw how few catches he had based on his body and being around him. And you know, we had him on right after the trade on Dukes and Bell, and he couldn't have been more engaging. I think he's going to be a real fan favorite with this fan base. No offense to Austin Hooper, but, you know, he kind of, I don't want to say gave a lot of Falcon fans or at least a lot of people in the media the kind of don't let the door hit you on in the behind on the way out type of attitude mm-hmm. when it comes to the way he handled himself here. And obviously being the way that he was and the way that he thought of himself going out of Atlanta, he was able to parlay that and do a pretty big deal in Cleveland. I just don't know if he is going to have as much of an impact in Cleveland as he had here. And I think part of that reason is because Matt Ryan is so tight end dependent. So I do agree that Hurst will have a sizable impact. And it's not that I am very high on Todd Gurley, but I also feel like Todd Gurley is coming into a situation where he knows he's going to be on a pitch count. He knows he is going to be back in a place where he's a lot more motivated to play. You think about some of the things that were happening behind the scenes of the Rams. He's making it sound like they were kind of holding him back, almost to the point where it was like a situation where, you know, maybe they were making some things up about his arthritic knee that really weren't true. And it's all gotten down to the fact, too, where he's at a point right now where he hasn't even gotten all his money from the Los Angeles Rams. So I think that there's more below the surface that's true about Todd Gurley than I think meets the eye. And so I think part of the – not saying that the health concerns and the things that Dirk Cutter said aren't completely overstated, but I also believe that, you know, he does have something left in him, and I think the Falcons can catch lightning in a bottle and catch it to the point where it's probably going to be a point where he has the kind of output that the Falcons aren't going to be able to pay him for next year.
Well, whatever he has left in the tank, I hope, is for the red zone, because that's where this team needs to get better.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, I'm totally fine if Todd Gurley's weekly box score is 10 carries for 48 yards but two touchdowns, and he's a sledgehammer in the money zone. That, to me, is really all I care about, because this team is going to go up and down the field. They're going to move the ball from the 20 to the 20. They just got to be able to score touchdowns in the red zone and not settle for three.
Yeah, that's the thing that people have this, I guess, selective memory when it comes to the Falcon offense, like it's a bunch of slubs. You still have a pretty good high-level quarterback who moves the football. This team gained a lot of yards. Now, you could say it was after the defense gave up a lot of the leads, and they were playing from behind a lot of times and having to throw the football. The problem, like you said, Nick, over the last couple of years, and it's going all the way back to when Kyle Shanahan was here, is being able to cash in the red zone. People are angry about the low touchdown numbers for a guy like Julio Jones, and I think the threat of Gurley opens things up for him as well in that regard.
Yeah, no, if Gurley can establish himself in the month of September as a red zone sledgehammer, then all of a sudden you see all these defenses, they start to creep up, and now you get those one-on-one opportunities for Julio or Ridley, or even if you, I mean, Hayden Hurst is an unbelievable athlete. Even if they were to flank him out or put him in the slot, you create a lot of one-on-one pressure points, and I think a lot of matchups that favor the Falcons over some of these teams in the South with what they have defensively.
The thing about Laquon Treadwell is he's going to kind of take that fourth wide receiver role that Justin Hardy had on this team. I think he might try to push Russell Gage for that first slot position. You maybe even can also split out Hayden Hurst in that regard, too, if you want to on certain packages. But I think Laquon is in a point where, again, anything you get from him is a bonus. The Dante Fowler thing is very, very curious, because here's the thing about Dante Fowler, and you brought this up earlier, is how much of his actual output can you gather from him that is also basically credited to the fact that he's standing alongside a guy like Aaron Donald. Now, he'll have a guy in a similar nature in Grady Jarrett here in Atlanta, but I'm just wondering how much of that factors into the output that he had when he was done with the Rams.
Yeah, and also with Jacksonville, too. I mean, once he recovered from that knee injury, some of the success that he did have in his limited time there, I mean, he was surrounded by guys like Calais Campbell, right. Giannis Ngakoue. I mean, he's always been on a defensive line with other dudes that were just monsters. So how much of it is Fowler? How much of it is, you know, success by affiliation? And maybe we won't really get the true answer, because obviously Dan Quinn felt like this year, look, you got to add Marlon Davidson with Grady Jarrett. Now all of a sudden that front four looks like it could be pretty formidable.
The other part, too, that I find very interesting is that I feel like Dante Fowler's greatest attribute is his name is not Vic Beasley. I feel like that's the big thing. He, like I used the word pariah earlier, that's what he was in this town. And again, I know you follow the show that normally is here a lot here. If you are listening to the radio station Dukes and Bell, you know, Mike Bell had a tattoo bet on his behind where he was going to get Vic Beasley's number 44 tattooed on his behind, or I think it was either his number or his face tattooed on his behind if he had 10 sacks this season. And I think he got to 8, but again, most of those were after the bye and after people had basically written off the entire season. So the fact that you had a guy in Beasley that had a 15.5 sack season the year the Falcons went to the Super Bowl and then basically nothing since, I think as long as you see Fowler in the backfield and you see him get some sacks, people aren't really going to care what his output is. They just care that his name is not Vic Beasley, which I find just I don't want to say it's unfair to Vic Beasley, but he did no favors on his way out. The fact that he wasn't here on time, and we've gone through it here on the air plenty of times about how he wanted to do his own training and kind of eschewed the Dan Quinn overtures and things of that nature. The fact that he's just not Vic Beasley, I think, is probably his greatest attribute to a lot of Falcons fans.
All right, right now, on the record, if Dexter Fowler gets you Dante Fowler gets you seven or eight sacks, are you in?
No.
I call him Dexter Fowler. I got baseball.
I'm not doing it. Although the guys did do a tattoo bet this year for the season record. The guys.
No. I'm not saying a tattoo bet. If he has seven or eight sacks this season, thumbs up.
I think it's great.
Okay.
I think it's great. And again, it has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that he's not Vic Beasley, which is odd. I'm not saying Dexter Fowler. You made me say it now. I'm not saying Dante Fowler needs to get double-digit sacks to have an impact with the Falcons. I think the biggest impact that has to happen right now is he and Charles Harris need to put a foot in Tack McKinley's behind to turn him into something that's other than a zero.
There you go.
Which I think has a great impact on the Falcons' offensive line as a whole. Marlon Davidson fits into that part of it as well. It is Dukes and Bell, Willie P. and Nick Kale in for the guys here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Radio.com app. Our Strong Arm Story of the Day comes your way next, including the Major League Baseball fight between the players and owners. Where are the talks as we sit right now? We'll get into that next on Dukes and Bell, Willie P. and Nick Kale in for the guys on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com.
The Strong Arm Story of the Day is brought to you by John Foy and Associates Personal Injury Law.
It is Dukes and Bell, Willie P. and Nick Kale in for the guys who are back tomorrow. In fact, they'll be talking to the governor of the great state of Georgia. Ryan Kemp joins the show at 4 o'clock to talk about the return of sports to the state of Georgia and also how he and the folks in the Georgia state government have been handling the coronavirus pandemic. The strong arm story, usually what we do when it comes to the strongest story of the day. I almost feel like, Nick, it has to be our hamburger hot dog argument, just the way that we've gotten the reaction from people. I've got more reaction on that than anything we've talked about today.
Look, let's face it. It's a holiday. There's not a ton of sports going on. Sometimes you get into a battle of beef between burgers and dogs, and people weigh in.
Now, there are some people who have a beef with you, and there are others who have a beef with me. Someone's standing for nachos. The nachos in the left corner when you exit the Chop House at SunTrust Park. I will say, again, it all came down to the portability when it came to the hamburger versus hot dog debate, but the strong arm story is actually baseball in itself when it comes to whether we actually will have players returning to play, whether it's in July or on the 4th of July or whatever the proposal ends up being. My question to you is this, Nick. Have they already caused some irreparable damage by the fact that this fight and back and forth is even existing?
I mean, it's got us talking about it. It gets people tweeting their anger and disgust. But honestly, if we get a season and we get a half a year or whatever we get, and it starts, you know, in the next 6 weeks, I don't think there's going to be any damage. If they do hit a roadblock and have an impasse and we get no baseball, I think it could be worse than it was 25 years ago.
I think it really just comes down to whether or not we get a deal or not, and that's really the $64,000 question that's on everybody else's mind. We talked to Bob Nightingale last hour. He seemed to be in a more optimistic sense, I would gather, just based on where he'd been and where a lot of people had been. I think a lot of people, even as late as Thursday or Friday of last week, we're kind of sitting there looking at the two sides and going, ooh, no one's budging. And that's the part of it that I think had a lot of people kind of crazy. But when you think about the report that came out from The Athletic on Sunday night, early Monday morning, when it said that the baseball owners are going to go back to the players with some sort of alternative, whether it's paying the initial agreed-upon prorated salary or deferring some money, I think that that has a better chance of going over than, say, a 50-50 revenue split, which basically is nothing more than what sounds like a salary cap to a lot of players.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. And I think, baseball, they just have to look at this from the standpoint of, we need to get this country going again. And we can look really good in doing so. And if we don't, we look terrible. Because right. as I mentioned to start the show, for me personally, there's nothing in sports that's a bigger turnoff than when billionaires are fighting with millionaires over money. So if you're the average person, you work a 9-to-5, you make $42,000 a year, you lost your job or you were furloughed because of COVID-19. Like, you have every right to be angry at guys arguing over 52 versus 48%, 50-50 split. I mean, it makes these guys so unrelatable to the common person, which is your core customer.
How easy, though, is it for them to lose that? Like, to lose that perspective? I feel like it can be very easily lost when you even think about a guy like Blake Snell. And again, I'm not trying to sit here and take up for him because I think the stance that he took was rather ludicrous. But just going through his process, if we weren't going through a global pandemic right now and we weren't having, like you said, a lot of these relatable type issues that are going to have to be on the minds of baseball players as they get back to play, when you think about it, he just signed his big money deal. And the fact is, baseball, with its archaic rules involving player control and the fact that you really can't negotiate your full deal until about 6-7 years inside the league, and that's after going through the minor leagues and basically wasting up your signing bonus. I'm not trying to make people feel sorry for baseball players in any way or shape or form, but I'm just saying, like, if you look at it from his perspective, it's like, man, I just got my money and you're going to take it away? Like, that part of it, I can kind of see where he's coming from. I probably would have said it in a way that's probably more eloquent and different and a lot less insensitive than he did. But when it comes down to it, a lot of baseball players feel like, number one, the players haven't acted in good faith, or the owners have never, ever negotiated with our side in good faith ever. And they've pulled the wool over our eyes. And number two, the way that you basically have to go get your money is in a very finite area of time. And for guys like him, Jacob DeGrom, guys like Ronald Acuna, who are outside of the team control situation, like that's a real, real perspective, and I think puts a spin on it that I think, again, it gets lost in some of the insensitive language that guys like Harper and Snell were using.
I mean, I've always been pro-player, so when it's player versus owner, I'm almost always on the player's side.
True.
And the whole process, as you mentioned, is antiquated. The fact that you could be 25 or 26 in the bigs for 6 years and still struggling to get that big deal is kind of ridiculous. But let's also look at it from the reality of how many times have we seen big-time contracts? And by the way, in Major League Baseball, completely guaranteed. It's not like the NFL. I mean, these guys, you get a 10-year, $240 million deal, it's guaranteed. But they always, always turn out to be bad deals. Albert Pujols, Ryan Howard, I mean, even Bryce Harper.
Dan Uglow.
4 years into that deal, it's going to be awful.
It is, and you're right. I mean, that's something that is now kind of a way the owners have almost kind of departed from that aspect. Like, a lot of those type of contracts have gone the way of the dodo bird because of the fact that they haven't paid off on the back end. You don't see owners going back and basically rewarding past performance with a future contract. It's always, what are you going to do for me down the road? So it's only the Harpers and the Trouts and the Machados, guys of that nature, who are just entering their prime and getting in their actual get money type stage that are being able to get those type of deals. But even then, on the back end, I don't think anybody's going to look at any one of those guys and say that they're earning their full share, especially if those numbers do decline the way many people predict that they would.
Yeah, no, I don't think anybody's going to say it's worth it. But is it worth it if, I mean, if you give, let's fast forward. Let's say a couple of years from now, Ronald Acuna, monster contract. If he gets a 10-year contract and the last 4 years are awful, but he gets you a World Series championship, was it worth it?
I think it is.
I would agree.
I think it is. And that's, but here's the problem is that a lot of owners, and again, I don't mean to impugn the fine folks, Liberty Media. Hello, Terry McGurk. I hope you're having a fantastic Memorial Day. But a lot of people and a lot of ownership groups don't know how to, there's not a line item for championship. Like, that doesn't factor into their, like the return on the investment as far as that goes. There's no line item for goodwill. when it comes to a lot of these ownership groups. And that's, I forget who it was. And again, I think it might have been Joe Patrick who's handling our updates today. And he was saying this when we were on the Batter Up podcast together, which is a radio.com property, as you know. But he said something of the fact that it was so great in rewatching the 95 World Series to have an owner that you could actually see. Mm-hmm. Like you could see the person, and there's a visible face, a visible voice, somebody who, from the accountability standpoint,
right,
is out in front of everything. The Braves don't have that right now. So because of that, it's a corporation. Right. And because of that, I think that, you know, not from the standpoint of saying that that would prevent Atlanta from doing a deal of that nature with Ronald Acuna, but that's why I almost shudder to think, because they look at it from a balance sheet standpoint. And like I said, there's no line item for goodwill or for championship. It doesn't compute to the balance sheet bean counter people.
So then your conclusion is, if it's a single owner, that owner cares more about winning than his bottom line return on investment. Whereas if you're owned by corporations and shareholders and 20 guys have their hands in the pot, you think it's more about making that bottom line revenue, and, oh, by the way, it would be nice to get a championship along the way?
I'm not saying that the singular owner cares more, but it's a lot easier to hide from the heat if you're a corporation than you are if you're a singular dude. Yep. Think about the hell the Steinbrenners went through when they were with the Yankees, in the years where they were lean, or think about the other team in that town. They want that team sold, you know, 10 years ago with the Mets, and even, you know, the Phillies had issues when it comes to their ownership groups, and they had to sell and go all up and down the line. The people wanted the people in Chicago, the Cub ownership group, they wanted them gone before they even got the World Series, and there are some that even would want them gone now because of what they've done to the city. So because of that, it's a lot easier to hide behind a corporation than it is if you are a singular owner.
I mean, I just think when we talk about baseball 2020, it's going to come down to two words. It's going to come down to motivation, and it's going to come down to trust. How motivated are players and owners to get back to playing, and how much do they trust each other?
I know we got far afield there when it came to talking about those things, but like I said earlier, the one thing that is going to completely ruin this is it goes back to the way we talked about comparing this to 94 and 95. You know, people forget that the players ended up getting a lot of what they bargained for, or at least ended up preventing the owners from doing a lot of what they wanted to do in terms of the negotiation standpoint. But that's part of the thing that nobody remembers about that period of time. What they remember is that there wasn't a World Series, and that there was an abbreviated season in 95, and they were talking about replacement players and scabs and guys crossing the picket line and all that stuff that basically was the reason why Michael Jordan returned to play basketball instead of playing baseball. It's all that stuff that factored in to us having the strife. And if Major League Baseball does not play in 2020, no one's going to care about whether it was the owner's fault or it was the player's fault. All they're going to care about was, we didn't play because of that collective whole.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about coming out of the strike of 94, there's like three things that stand out to me. Number one, the summer of 98 with Bonds and McGuire and Sosa and, you know, the steroids and everything. And then, of course, obviously the Braves-Indians followed by the Braves and the Yankees.
And the fact that you have the opportunity to stand alone, again, and by alone I mean with NASCAR and, you know, maybe an NBA is back in July, or maybe an NHL is back in July, but basically to stand mostly alone in the sports world and captivate some attention. Like, I don't understand why baseball isn't like trying to figure this thing out and be back tomorrow. Like
well,
that's the thing.
I mean, think about this. Today's Memorial Day, a very patriotic American day.
Usually you have baseball on.
Yeah, like how great would it be for Major League Baseball to return on the 4th of July?
Crazy. It'd be amazing.
You'd be silly not to get a deal in place to begin your season on America's Independence Day for America's pastime.
It'd be a black eye on the sport.
Yep.
A total black eye on the sport. It is Dukes and Bell, Willie P., Nick Cale in for the guys on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. They are back tomorrow. Guy Talk comes your way next, including a discussion about which of these two, what I would call, are perceived crimes in the sports watching world are worse. We'll explain that when we come back. Willie P. and Nick Kalen for Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and wherever you might be listening to us via the radio.com app. And radio.com. Something you and I, Nick, were talking about when we were preparing the show is you had some sort of apathy toward the DVR sports watcher, which is something more of an advent of the current climate because people are, you know, binging their next episode of Peaky Blinders and not necessarily wanting to interrupt their sports watching life and things of that nature, and they'll like wait for the game to start and try and have the game catch up for them on DVR, and they don't want any particular interaction with any other human being whatsoever. Don't talk to me because I DVR'd the game.
Yeah, I mean, I've never understood that fan. So, like, if you root for a certain team or anything that matters to you in sports, how you can DVR it and then zip through it, or like if you do what we do for a living and you have to watch certain teams for your job, how you can, you know, wait 40 minutes, have the DVR rolling, and then play catch-up. And then I think the thing that compounds the issue, what makes it worse, is when you start tweeting on a delay, saying, hey, I'm just catching up on so-and-so, and it's like, we're watching the game midway through the second quarter in real time, and Joe Blow over here is, you know, tweeting about something that happened in the first quarter because he's on a DVR delay. It just drives me insane.
I find it interesting that you've known people who do what we do for a living and they have the mental capacity to watch, you know, their own personal team that they grew up rooting for and then also have the mental capacity to go and watch the team that they have to watch for their job.
I
find that particularly fascinating. I'm not wanting to out anybody. I'm just saying I find that particularly fascinating because I don't have that mental capacity or the amount of time to do that.
You almost have to, like, you talk about the mental capacity – you got to view two different things completely differently. As a fan, you're just watching it as a total maniac.
Right.
You know, in our line of work, whether you root for the Falcons or not, or if you move to Atlanta from somewhere else, you have to just flat out have to be objective.
Yeah. I feel like I'm when I watch the Falcons, I can't, like, be drinking beer or anything like that. I have to, you know, I have to have a notepad out. And you know, I'll go back and rewatch the All 22. Like, I'll get really nerdy into it. It gets to be that way. And so
you're old school notepad still?
Old school notepad. I can't take notes on the phone because I have the phone out usually doing like social media stuff like that. That's why.
You know what's a terrible thing that I used to do, and I try not to do it anymore, is tweeting incessantly during a game.
I stopped doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like basically I'm jotting down my notes for the game on my Twitter feed.
Right.
I'm thinking, it's just a bad idea.
Well, the people who do play-by-play are the worst on Twitter. It's like, dude, if you want a play-by-play account, you have so many ways of getting that. And one of them is not Twitter. You know, like
right.
ESPN Gamecast or the NFL app or listening to us on 92.9 The Game with Wes and Arch. I mean, those guys... Again, that's how you get a play-by-play of the actual event when you're, you know, I don't know anybody who gets play-by-play from Twitter who that's their only way of they consume the event.
You know, it's funny you bring up like play-by-play Twitter guy. I'm trying to figure out when the consumer is in a position where the only way to find out what's going on is through Twitter play-by-play guy.
I have no idea.
Because if you're on Twitter, I'm assuming you're on your phone.
Right.
If you're on your phone, I'm assuming that you could probably stream the game to some extent, visually or audibly. I don't know why Twitter play-by-play guy exists.
It is at this point where I also would like to remind the listeners that if you are outside of your car and wanting to consume our product, being the radio.com app, do sort of download that. Use the rewind function if you missed anything earlier, like our interview with Bob Nightingale or our discussion about hamburgers and hot dogs. You can find that on the rewind function of the radio.com app. I asked the folks online, which sports TV watcher is worse, DVR guy or multi-screen guy? Because I get a lot of crap from people for having multiple screens. And I don't know why, but again, it's because, like, what I'll do is I'll have the Falcons on a big TV,
mm-hmm.
I'll have another game inside the division on another TV, and then I'll have the red zone on a third TV.
Well, what's funny is I used to be against multiple TVs, and now I've got the 65, which is the main game, and I've got it flanked left and right with two 32-inch TVs.
Love it.
So now I feel like I can do a lot, but I also used to be the guy. See, I'm evolving as a human.
Yeah.
Like I was anti-NFL Red Zone channel for... up until like 2015.
My girlfriend gets angry when I put the Red Zone on. I'm not going to lie to you.
I mean, on a Sunday, your game
she
of choice
it.
Plus the Red Zone. I mean, if you don't have the Red Zone on a second TV, you probably don't play fantasy football.
I love the Red Zone. The Red Zone is the greatest television invention of the 21st century.
Well, there's nothing better than when your team is on bye and
yes.
you don't have to sweat out your team and you can just lounge and watch the Red Zone.
This is literally what I did when when the Falcons were on a bye last year, because I was so fed up. We were 2-6, and I'm sitting there and I'm so ticked off. And I think I think United was playing. United had a home game. And it was before the United game, and all we did was we went and drank a bunch of beers out at one of the bars by Mercedes-Benz, and all we were doing was just basically treating the bar like it was the Red Zone. Like, we were just walking around to all the different TVs, like, okay, this is one game. Okay, this game's a commercial, we're going to walk over. And literally, that's all we did. And so it's like having that at your home. Like, I can't envision what life would be like without the Red Zone.
But you know what's interesting, though? As good as the Red Zone channel is, you know, college football tried to replicate it with the ESPN goal line package. And, you know, the NBA and the NHL...
Not the same.
They've got their own networks and live look-ins, but nothing comes remotely close to the Red Zone channel.
The NBA does a thing now where I think they make the last 2 minutes of every game available online, because a lot of times the big knock on the NBA is that, you know, no matter what the score is, the first 46 minutes, it's always going to be within a couple of scores in the final 2 minutes. So they've tried to do that. Yeah, the ESPN goal... Here's the problem with the ESPN goal line is that they don't have the rights to all the games. So, like, you don't get that 2:30, 3:30 CBS SEC window in there, and you don't get the Fox games involved. Like, that's the one part where that particular thing falls short. And a lot of times, too, you'll get a scenario where the only games on are, like, you know, games in the group of five or FCS games. Like, and so
from a Red Zone channel, there's two of them.
Yeah.
Are you Siciliano DirecTV or are you Hanson NFL Network?
I am NFL Network.
Okay.
Scott Hanson Stan.
Good.
Because here's a problem. Siciliano's ears bug me out, man.
I know. I just want to grab. You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of Ross Perot.
Yes.
He's got the biggest ears since Ross Perot.
I feel like he can fly away. So I did for the longest time. I did a show that basically models itself as the NFL radio Red Zone equivalent, if you will. And we had a setup where we had 9 TVs.
Wow.
That is exhausting. You feel like you're not watching a damn thing.
Nope.
But I feel like if you're doing like an NFL Red Zone on one side, another game on another side, and your main game in the middle, I feel like that's okay.
It's interesting. You mentioned the word exhausting. Like, I'm at the point where I've always loved college football as much as the NFL, if not maybe a little bit more. But there's just something about exhaustion with the NFL.
Oh, yes.
Where, like, by Sunday night, even a quarter into the Sunday night football game.
I'm asleep.
I am so fatigued from watching, tweeting, fantasy checking, betting. Whereas on Saturday, at like 9:30 on a Saturday night, I could go another 10 hours of college football.
We had the week 2 game in the Sunday night window when they played the Eagles.
Yep.
I had to take a nap during the late window because I knew if I watched the 4 o'clock games, I knew I wouldn't been able to watch the entire Falcon game. Like, I knew I wasn't going to make it. I just knew. And
so this was like a Thanksgiving Day nap?
It was basically a Thanksgiving Day nap is what I did. I took like a 3:34. I basically right after the witching hour ended, I was basically done. I was done skis.
Well, the final 45 minutes in real time of the 1 o'clock window is the most stressful stretch of football for anybody.
Absolutely. I'm actually surprised that this actually is a lot closer. Which sports TV watcher is worse? It's like 51% DVR guy, 49% multi-screen guy. What did I do to hurt you people?
Well, I mean,
what did I do to hurt you?
What makes you a bad person for being a multi-screen guy?
I have no idea.
I mean, if you can afford it or if you've invested your money in it. The only thing I hate is the guy who always feels the need to tweet out pictures of his setup.
Now, this is the dude that I don't like. If you have a bunch of people over having beers and stuff like that, I hate the guy who has to have his game on like his screen and like he's watching it and he's reacting to it. That if you're watching a game that nobody else is watching, that bothers the bejesus out of me.
Okay, that's fair.
And bad bothers the bejesus out of me. It is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Dukes and Bell, Willie P, and Nick Kalen here. I feel like this needs to come back because I feel like we haven't unearthed enough of this. Because I really want to figure out why the hell you people are angry at me about that. 404-741-0929 on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. We'll talk about that. Top three headlines at 6. The match, NASCAR, MLB, all on the way. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and radio.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.